My distinguished guest today is Dr. Stanley Monteith, and he's a researcher, a talk show host, retired orthopedic surgeon, historian, lecturer, author, and Carol author. And so I'm going to go ahead, and if you have anything to add to that, Dr. Monteith.
No, with that glowing introduction, I can hardly wait to hear what I have to say, but I appreciate so much your kind words. And it's really been an adventure since we left our medicine and went into talk radio, and now we are forced to do a newsletter every single month for our supporters, and it's a constant learning process, but what a privilege it is to have a voice that can be heard around the world, especially at this time in history.
Right. And how long have you been retired doing this?
I really started about 1993, and I probably retired in 94. And we've been doing it all since about 14 years now. And we have about 60 different outlets. Some of our internet, some of them are shortwave, satellite, radio. I have a number of stations that do carry our programs. And we're just trying to educate people to get them to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. In fact, someone once said that an understanding of the forces that shape the events of the 20th century is predicated not upon facts to be learned, but rather upon secrets to be discovered. And there really are secrets out there. And, of course, the more you study, the more you begin to delve into these secrets and pull back the veil and begin to see the frightening image that's on the other side.
Well, and there's, I guess I was just reviewing some of your work with this Brotherhood of Darkness, and it appears you've been studying this for quite a while, correct?
I've been studying it for 46 years. I got started back in 1962, and you get off on every imaginable rabbit trail. Initially, I thought the enemy was communism. All is communism at that time. The communists controlled, you know, about a quarter of the landmass of the world, a third of the people in the world, and communism looked like it was an enemy until I began to study and realize, of course, that communism had been funded by people here in the United States since its inception. So that didn't really quite make sense. Why would anybody want to build up such a ruthless and tyrannical regime? And then you come across the great tax-exempt foundations, the Rockefeller, Ford, and Carnegie foundations, and the investigation that was held back in 1953 and 1954 that's been suppressed ever since that time.
Are you talking about the Rees-Dodd Commission?
The Rees Committee, and you know, with Norman Dodd as the director of research, and in fact, we eventually were able to get the plates of the book that was written by the counsel for the committee, Rennie Wormser, and we've kept the book in print ever since, I guess for the last 15 years, called Foundations, Their Power and Influence. But the surprising thing is you begin to realize the profound impact that the great tax-exempt foundations, Rockefeller and Carnegie and Ford, have on our society. And then you find out that were financing communism and had been financing it, you know, for 30 or 40 years before the investigation there. So then, of course, you realize, of course, the council on the foundations have to be the real force behind what's going on, and then you find out their tie into the Council on Foreign Relations, and then, of course, 1966, why I read Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, The History of the World in Our Time, and he was a liberal historian who had taught at Harvard and Princeton before he went to Georgetown University, and, of course, his most famous student was William Jefferson Clinton, who became President of the United States by following Professor Quigley's advice. And Professor Quigley writes about a secret society that was created in 1891 that was actually the forerunner of what today is the Council on Foreign Relations, which controls both political parties. And I mean, they always control both sides. They have for, you know, many, many decades. And today, of course, as we're moving towards an election, people don't understand John McCain's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Certainly, Obama chose Joe Biden to be his vice president. Joe Biden was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. Both Biden and McCain have written articles for Council on Foreign Relations publication.
Is not Obama's wife a member also?
I don't know that. I have never heard that. It could be true. Lots of things I don't know, but I've never heard that, but we'll have to look into it. But certainly we know that both McCain and Obama have written articles for the Council on Foreign Relations publication, Foreign Affairs, that's their magazine, and both McCain and Obama have attended their meetings. So they, you know, it's all a charade. Doesn't matter which political candidate we elect, they will control the picking of the cabinet and who the key players are in the administration and determine the foreign and domestic policy, because the Secretary of State always comes from the Council on Foreign Relations, whether it's a Democrat or Republican. The Director of the Central Intelligence always comes from the CIA, whether it's a Democrat or Republican. The Chairman of the Federal Reserve Board.
You said they came from the CIA, but you mean from the CIA?
Actually, they came from the Council on Foreign Relations.
Okay.
The CIA, the chairman of the director of the CIA always comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. The man who chairs the or director of the Federal Reserve System always comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. And really, he is far more important than the President of the United States, because he determines the monetary policy not only of the United States, but of the whole world. That is certainly one of the most powerful positions in the world, far more powerful than the presidency. And you can go down to the Secretary of Defense, and most of the cabinet positions are headed by somebody who comes from the membership roles of the Council on Foreign Relations. But what Professor Quigley brings out so well in his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, which was suppressed for many years, and we even have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells that story of how his book was suppressed. But the Council on Foreign Relations is a front. It's a front for a group known as the Round Table, which was a front for the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which is a front for the Association of Helpers, which was a front for the Society of the Elect, which was a front for the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created in 1891, which was founded on occult principles with occult objectives, and many people who were with him, at least one person who was in the original four who created that organization, was deeply involved in the occult, and both Cecil Rhodes and his right-hand man, Lord Miller, had sworn an oath to Lucifer when they joined the Masons, and of course, most people, and even Professor Quigley, had no idea of the occult background of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is, for all intents and purposes, the invisible government of the United States today.
Now, when you're talking about Cecil Rhodes, and you're talking about the... Okay. My mind just went blank on that one, so... I ran across that... agenda of the Rhodes, but I also have run across something, and I'm wondering if this one ties into the Fulbright.
Surely, the Fulbright scholarships sent people to Oxford to be indoctrinated in the views that Cecil Rhodes laid out, just as the Rhodes scholarships are used for the same purpose, to send people to Oxford University, where they take control of their minds and program them to be believe in this concept of world government. This is really what it's about. They want to create a world government. They want to destroy Christianity. They want to create a world religion. They want, of course, to destroy our currency and create a global currency, because you can't have a world government without a global currency. And then they eventually want to enthrone a world leader. And this has always been their objectives and goals. But the average individual, probably many people within the Council on Foreign Relations, don't even know how it all fits together. But they do what they're told, and if you don't do what you're told, why, you're not a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. They will do everything they can to convince you that they are right, and that what we need to do is do away with national sovereignty, end wars, and bring about a world government, which sounds great, unless you understand that it was these same people who are so much in favor of doing away with war who created the Boer War, who created the First World War, who created the Second World War, who created the Korean War and the Vietnam War and the First Gulf War, and now this terrible, insane war we're in Afghanistan. Afghanistan and Iraq today, and they're planning, of course, expanding this into a war with Iran and the entire Muslim world. In fact, what most people do not know, and of course we cover this in my January 2008 newsletter, and I hope people go to our website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and pull down my January 2008 newsletter entitled The Sybil Edmonds Story. And Sybil Edmonds, of course, has been worked for the FBI, and when she worked for the FBI, she became aware of the fact that there is, and was at that time, and probably still is, a Turkish and Israeli spy ring that's working at the upper echelons of our State Department and is transferring nuclear technology to Pakistan so it can be distributed to other Muslim nations. And everything has been done to silence Sybil Edmonds. She tried to get the story out. The FBI ordered her not to mention it. The Justice Department put a gag order on her. She appealed this to a federal court, to a federal appeals court, to the Supreme Court of the United States. And they all said we could not let the American people know that the American government was allowing the transfer of nuclear technology to Pakistan. Nobody's ever asked how a third-rate nation like Pakistan could ever build a nuclear bomb. And, of course, the truth is they couldn't have built it without the help of the United States. And this is all in preparation for the coming war with the Muslim world, which I fear will be a nuclear war. But they cannot let the American people know the truth. And so the Sybil Edmonds story has been totally suppressed here in the United States. Although any of your leaders who are skeptical can go up on the Internet and just simply Google in the word Sybil, S-I-P-E-L, Edmonds, E-D-M-O-N-D-S, Sybil Edmonds. And in the London Times, January 2008, I think it was the 6th or 8th of January, the London Times article on Sybil Edmonds, where she told them the story, risked imprisonment for the rest of her life or even murder, because they do kill people who tell the truth. And the London Times ran a series of articles on this, and it was all over the rest of the world and totally blacked out in the United States, because, of course, they don't want the American people to know we're moving towards a nuclear war with the Muslim world.
And so how do they sign up with your newsletter?
They simply can call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And they can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. They can get our newsletter, or they can get our newsletter and our four best tapes or CDs of the month. And we have a small number of people out there across America who do belong to the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and that's the primary means by which we're able to fund what we do and buy radio time on stations all across America.
So you really got a little head start on some of us.
Right. Okay.
I'm relatively new at it, but, you know, it's just really great that there's people out there like you. You've got so much information, it just flows out of you. But I think we need to back up a little bit on a couple of items, because I'm not quite sure that my audience is terribly up on some of the groups and things you were talking about, but I did want to hit upon a little bit on the CFR. It has to be very much tied in with what's going on with the economy right now.
It certainly is. In fact, there have been several recent articles and talks given by members of the CFR. There's an article that came out in the year 2007, published in Foreign Affairs magazine, and a speech that was given earlier this year by a researcher there at the Council on Foreign Relations, and both of them advocated a global currency. And, of course, this global currency is to be backed by gold and privately issued. So, basically, of course, we're seeing the central banks of the world selling their gold. Why would they be doing that? Well, they say they need the money. No, that's absurd. Central banks simply print money. They don't have to sell gold to get it. But what they're doing is transferring the gold, the major gold holdings of the world, into private hands. And these private hands, and we're talking about the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and a few other wealthy friends, are buying up the gold, and they're planning on issuing a gold-backed currency, because you see, our currency is going to collapse here in the United States, and with that will be the impoverishment of our people. They're going to lose their pension funds, and they're going to lose their life savings, and they're going to lose their investments in bonds and treasury bills and CDs and money market funds. They're going to lose certainly their value of their insurance policies and their annuities. You destroy a currency, and you destroy the people of the nation, the life savings of the people of the nation. That's what they're planning on doing. And, of course, then when the people have been impoverished, they're going to look for a permanent currency, and that's going to be the gold-backed currency that will be issued by the people of great wealth who have been amassing the gold of the world. So we can have a privately issued gold-backed currency, and that's what it's all about.
I know you interview a number of different people that are up on this sort of the monetary system and that sort. My question is why would they need to have gold-backed currency if fiat currency has worked so well for them?
Because it really doesn't work well. It always ends up collapsing, which it's doing at the present time. And what they really want is to reestablish a sense of stability in the world. And the only way you can have financial stability is with a gold-backed currency. Otherwise, the politicians will simply print more money so they can get themselves reelected. They print the money, they give it to their constituents, they build a bridge to nowhere, as they were going to do up in Alaska. I think they're going to build a bridge to this island, which is going to cost, well over $1 million. For every person on the island, a couple of million dollars for every person on the island. There weren't that many people on the island, except that Senator Stevens' own property up there on the island, and he wanted a bridge to it, so they called it the Bridge to Nowhere. But politicians have never been responsible. They weren't responsible in ancient Greece, where they tried a fiat money system. They weren't responsible in ancient Rome, where they tried a fiat money system. They have never been responsible throughout all time. I mean, they had a fiat money system in ancient Florence, and it worked for a couple hundred years. They had a fiat money system in ancient Venice. It worked for 150 years or more. They had a fiat money system in France in 1705, and it collapsed. And then they had a fiat money system in the United States. It was used to finance the Civil War. It was called the Continental Currency. And that's where the phrase, "it isn't worth a continental," came from. And then, of course, they had they tried the same thing all over again in France in 1789. It didn't work. And it's not working now because, of course, our currency is all built upon debt. And we have these massive debt layers today. And the whole world financial system is collapsing as we speak. And even if we get this $700 billion that they're asking for, this bailout, they're basically are probably $5 to $10 trillion worth of debt that will never be repaid today. The $700 billion is just a down payment of transfer of money to the wealthy to impoverish the people. Fiat money systems don't work. The one we're involved in is collapsing. And that's why, out of the chaos that's coming, they're going to come up with a gold-backed currency. At least that is what they are talking about. And they have to have a gold-backed currency, so they can have global trade. As far as domestic trade, it'll probably become a cashless society, and you'll neither buy nor sell unless you have some sort of a mark or a number or code. And with a cashless society, all they have to do is get everybody into that, and then if they don't like you, they turn off your credit card and you starve to death.
Right.
So what we're really up against today, there are evil and wealthy people out there who want to control everything in the world, and they do.
And what's taking place right now it's been by design, and by design for quite a while, hasn't it?
Absolutely. They knew it was going to happen. We know that because several years ago they changed the bankruptcy law so that, if you got too far into debt, you couldn't get out. And before that, you could just write everything off and start it all over again. They knew it was coming. That's why, of course, they changed the bankruptcy laws. They knew it was coming. And this is, of course, why, of course, they've been transferring money from the United States to other countries, the big boys, the people who have sums of money. And basically, this is why they encourage people to get into debt. This is why they encourage people to buy homes they couldn't afford. This is why they let people buy homes with literally nothing down. One of my friends bought a home, and he got back $25,000 for buying a home. Why would you do something like that? If you're going to have a responsible system, you know, a monetary system, people have to have some investment in what they're buying. You know, or they can simply walk away from the home, and that's what they're doing increasingly. As more and more homes, you know, people owe far more on the home than the home is worth in the current market, and they're simply walking away and leaving the banks there with the house, which they can't sell for, unless they can discount the price. And we're seeing the implosion of our entire monetary system.
Well, do you not think then that this is all part? Part of a plan that this is part of the process of creating the central bank too?
Well, they're going to have a one world bank going along with a one world government and the one world currency and the one world court and the one world army. Everything is to bring about a world government under a master bureaucracy and the loss of freedom as we know it.
Okay, and when you were talking about various groups like the CFR and the round tables and that, but the tax exempt organizations, but the UN is very much involved in this, correct?
Absolutely. The UN was set up to become the format for the world government, and of course it is expanding its power with the law of the sea treaties so that they can begin to tax us. They already have a world army, which is NATO. They have a world court, they have a world criminal court, they have a world police force, which is Interpol. And the average American doesn't understand. This is part of the plan to destroy the sovereignty of our nation and bring us under the same sort of authoritarian rule that exists in communist China and communist Russia, both of which are being subsidized today by American tax dollars. And if anybody doubts that, you really need to get my little pamphlet called The Communist Capitalist Alliance, a term that was used by Solzhenitsyn when he talked to the AFL-CIO back in 1975 in a speech that was totally suppressed. In fact, they even, when they talked about it, they always gave the wrong pages. It was reproduced in the Congressional Record, but they always used the wrong pages because the last thing they want is for the American people to read the truth. But we've reproduced part of his speech and other material in our pamphlet, The Communist Capitalist Alliance, which demonstrates and gives you the references the fact that communism in both Russia and China has been financed since inception. Right here in the United States, and it was the American State Department that brought communism to China. It was the American financiers who financed Lenin so that his government could survive despite his terrible brutality. And if you go to the headquarters of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is located at 58 East 68th Street in New York City, and of course you have to have a special permission to get in. You got to get by the armed guards, but I have been there a number of occasions going through their files. And there, right next to the librarian's desk, is a little stand with a glass cover. And inside of that is a copy of Foreign Affairs magazine. And it is a very significant copy of Foreign Affairs because it's the one that Vladimir Lenin read, and he had written in the margins there. He was so excited to find out there were people here in America who shared his views. Lenin, who killed millions of people, is adored and venerated by the people in the Council on Foreign Relations, who one day will do the same thing here in America.
I was going through some pictures, and I was literally amazed at the resemblance of Lenin and Michael Chertoff.
There is certainly a resemblance, isn't there?
Yes. I just thought that was kind of an interesting coincidence. Now, you were talking about tragedy and hope a little bit earlier, and in one of your videos, you speak of part of it was missing, and I have a version of it, and I didn't realize part of it was missing.
No, it probably isn't missing. If yours is 1,342 pages,
it's
all there. Basically, What happened was that Professor Quigley had been researching this secret society. He stumbled across it back in about 1946 or 1947, and I'm telling you this story because I spent many weeks at Georgetown University going through Professor Quigley's papers. And so I almost feel like I knew him, because he was long since dead. But I was able to get a lot of information out before his papers were laundered, and I suspect a lot of this I have has actually been shredded by now. But basically, we went through Professor Quigley's papers, and we found out that he had discovered the existence of a secret society. He was actually over in London, I think, in 1946, 1947, researching the power structure of England, who really ran the country. And he became friends with a man named Alfred Zimmern. And Alfred Zimmern, you know, after they'd gotten to know one another fairly well, Zimmern was a professor at Oxford University, professor of international law, international relations, and, of course, Professor Quigley was a professor of history and professor of economics. So they got to be fast friends. And finally, Zimmern said, look, you're wasting your time. You can't understand anything in England unless you understand the secret society, because I was part of it. So, but you can't tell anybody what I'm going to tell you. And so Zimmern told Professor Quigley the story of the Council on Foreign Relations, how it really was a front for the round table, the international, the organization known as the International, the Royal Institute of International Affairs. And Zimmern told Quigley about how Cecil Rhodes had created the secret society in 1891, and then it had all these layers, one the Society of the Elect and the Association of Helpers, and then the front group known as the Round Table, and then they created the Royal Institute in England and all the Commonwealth countries, and the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States. And this became the real power structure that was running the world. So Professor Quigley began to research this, and he eventually, of course, put together a lot of material in a book called The Anglo-American Establishment. But he could never get it printed. It was only actually printed after he had died, and we do carry that book. Well, anyway, then Professor Quigley wrote Tragedy and Hope, The History of the World in Our Time. It was published in 1966 by Macmillan Company. And, you know, of course, the book gets out there. The editors of Macmillan have no idea the significance of what Professor Quigley has written about this secret society that really dominates the world and ties into the international financiers and the people of great wealth in the United States and throughout the world, and interlocks with the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which really controls England, so, and the other Commonwealth countries. So when the book started to get, you know, read by people in the conservative movement, anti-communist movement, because, of course, he goes into how, of course, these people of great wealth had actually helped communism at every turn. So somebody immediately buys up Macmillan and destroys the plates to the first half of the book. And for many years, the publisher kept telling Quigley that they were going to reproduce the plates and publish the book again, but they absolutely refused to do it. And eventually, of course, Professor Quigley's wife was furious because they wanted the money from publishing the book. And so she went down and talked to the people at Macmillan. They finally admitted they had no intention of republishing the book, and that the plates of the first half of the book had been destroyed. They did put out a publication which included the last half of the book, but not the first half of the book, which really delves so much into the secret society. Well, then, of course, a gentleman actually got hold of a copy of the book. He made plates from it. He began publishing it as a pirate copy without copyright permission. So Quigley actually went to his publisher and demanded that they sue this man, and they refused. And after a time, it became obvious that they had no intention of reproducing the book. Quigley got the copyright back again. The pirate went to Quigley and offered to give him $3 a copy for every copy he sold, and Quigley jumped the chance, so the book went back in print. And it was printed for a number of years, and then, of course, the gentleman who was printing it died, and he actually gave the plates to a friend of mine who publishes the book. He is in Southern California, and that's where the book comes from today. And it's a momentous book, but it is the most important book that anyone of your listeners will ever read. Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World at a Time. It is available from my ministry by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. You have to read the book with a jaundiced eye, remembering that Professor Quigley, number one, was a liberal college professor. He hated Christianity. He disliked America. He basically supported these elitists who want to rule the world. He thought what they were doing was wonderful, because you need an elite group, because people are too dumb to rule themselves. But he really believes that the public needed to understand how fortunate we were to have this elite who rule us, and that's why I wrote the book. And so the book is available. We actually have an interview with Professor Quigley, which we found back at his papers there at Georgetown University, and bought the rights to reproduce it from his wife, and we put out probably thousands of copies of that interview. It's the only interview I know where he tells much of the story I've told you today.
So you must have quite a few books that's available off your site then.
We do. If people can go there, we'll be glad to send them a catalog. We have the important books, whether it be Nesta Webster's Story of the French Revolution, and of course the Masonic involvement of that and the tie-in to the Illuminati, or a book written by the Librarian of Congress, which they've done everything they could to suppress, but we don't make any money by putting the book out. They made it very unprofitable for people to circulate it, but the book is Fire in the Minds of Men, written by the Librarian of Congress, James H. Billington, that goes into the Illuminati and the secret societies in Europe. He doesn't tell you about the secret societies in the United States, in that book, but because he's part of the Council on Foreign Relations complex. But he understands what's really going on, but his book, Fire in the Minds of Men, takes you in the background of the Illuminati and the secret societies of Europe and the world revolution that began with the French Revolution and continues going on today. He ends the book with a revolution in Cuba in 1959, but of course in my DVD, The World Revolution, we take you up to the fall of Nepal, and this was about 2 years ago, when the American State Department was backing the communist element that was trying to overthrow the government in Nepal, because they have to overthrow every government. You got to have a world government. You got to control every nation, and that's what we're fighting in the Muslim world today, to crush the Muslim nations and install our puppets there, as we have in Afghanistan. The gentleman who, of course, is the Karzai, the so-called president of Afghanistan. Where did he come from? He used to work for UNICAL.
That's what I understand. Now, you said something that was in one of your videos again that was significant, that was repeated by someone else, and I don't know if it was Quigley or not, but it had to do with the effect that, wars aren't made to win.
Well, Quigley said that. Well, we don't fight wars to win. We just fight wars to fight wars. And because they're a wonderful diversion. And this is really true, that we did not try to win the Korean War. In fact, we actually put the 7th Fleet, the American 7th Fleet, between Formosa, or Taiwan, and the mainland, not to protect, the Taiwan from being invaded by the Chinese communists, but to prevent the Taiwanese from trying to invade mainland China. And of course, by doing that, then the Chinese were able to take their armies off of mainland China and move them up into Manchuria, to bring them down into Korea to kill our boys. In fact, if you read General MacArthur's reminiscences, and you'll find what I just mentioned there, he also will tell you that, quote from General Lin Piao, who headed the communist troops who were killing our boys in North Korea, saying, "I never would have risked my troops and my military reputation and attacked the American forces if I'd not been guaranteed that Washington would restrain General MacArthur from retaliating against my lines of supply." So, I mean, he knew things that General MacArthur didn't know about American policy. He knew that the American government had no intention of winning the war in Korea any more than we wanted to win the war in Vietnam. 58,000 Americans died. died. But what people do not understand is during the Vietnam War, the United States government and American corporations were funding communist Russia, that was funding communist North Vietnam, that was funding the communist troops in the Viet Cong in South Vietnam that were killing the American boys in the rice paddies of the villages of South Vietnam. We never tried to win the war. The war was totally unnecessary. The Gulf of Tonkin was a phony. Certainly, we could have ended the wars at any moment by simply bombing the dikes in North Vietnam and flooding the country, or by bombing the electric plant so that there was no electricity, or by blockading the harbor at Haiphong. You sink a ship in the mouth, or you bomb the rail yards, or you bomb the ships there so that supplies can't get in. We were not allowed to do that. We were not allowed to try to win the war. It was a phony war, and all those boys died for nothing, just as the boys over there in Iraq and Afghanistan are fighting a no-win war. How can I say that? Well, I hope your listeners will go to my website and read my December 2000 letter, my December 2007 newsletter. It's actually a talk that was given by General Ricardo Sanchez, Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, who actually commanded all of the American forces and coalition forces in Iraq, you know, from 2003 to 2004, and you read what he said. He said we weren't allowed to win the war. And, of course, in Afghanistan, what's really so absurd, if you stop and think about it, is that where did the Taliban get their money and their funding? Why, they get it from the Pakistani ISI, Pakistani Intelligence. Where did they get their money from? They get it from the Pakistani government. Where did the Pakistani government get their money from? They get it from your tax dollars. We've given them $10 billion since they started financing the Taliban, who are killing our boys in the opium fields and the villages of Afghanistan. We are funding the enemy in Afghanistan as we funded the enemy in Vietnam, and they're all phony wars, because the Brotherhood of Darkness and this occult organization that permeates every aspect of our society and the world really wants carnage and horror, and this is why I fear that we're looking at some terribly difficult times in the future right here in the United States, and I'm looking for a nuclear war with the Muslim world, because as I mentioned earlier in the Sybil Edmonds story, the only logical explanation for the fact that our State Department is intentionally allowing the transfer of nuclear technology to Pakistan, which is actually, of course, transferring that technology to Iran and North Korea and to Libya, or at least they did transfer it to Libya. We are building up the best enemy that money could buy once again, as we did in Vietnam, as we did certainly as we're doing today in Afghanistan and in Iraq. I mean, where is the money coming for the terrorists, you know, for the Al-Qaeda forces that are operating or were operating in Iraq? Why it was coming from Saudi Arabia. And who funds Saudi Arabia? We do. Same thing, of course, some of the money and some of the fighters came from Pakistan that we're funding. We carry a book called The Devil's Game that goes into how the CIA funded the Taliban, how they funded the radical Islamic movement, until people began to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. Why we're going to continue being in the same tragic situation we're in today.
I find it so interesting that, I mean, you know, I'm getting close to 60 years old, and have spent so much of my life being totally in the dark on this, because I wasn't looking for information like this, so it's easy to live your life and not run into it, but then once you start digging in, I mean, it's like opening a closet that's ready to burst open with information, because it's everywhere.
It is, and it becomes so obvious. Once somebody points it out to you, it becomes so obvious. I'm going to have to run for about 2 minutes. Why don't you talk, and I'll be right back.
Okay.
I'm back, and I didn't want to leave you here in the pickle, so let's go right ahead.
Okay, well, what I was mentioning, too, is that, you know, you have a radio program that's carried on Genesis Network, and I'm sure you've got it in other markets, too. Correct?
Well, basically, we start out the morning. We do the American Freedom Network. That's at 7 o'clock in the morning out of Colorado. That's available on the Internet at AmericanNewsNet.com. Of course, everything I'm going to say is available on our website at RadioLiberty.com, and you can track it down. Then we do a program from 3 to 5 on Genesis, and then, of course, we do a program from 8 to 10 on the Radio Liberty Network, and that, of course, you can hear that on shortwave, on the Internet, and it's on about 9 major radio stations across America at the time. It's between 8 to 10 in the evening. And then, of course, we do a Saturday program that's heard on 33 stations. Now, of course, most of these we have to pay for, but we do get very good rates, so we just can't afford to do it. But we can be heard, and anybody would like to know more information about our ministry, go to RadioLiberty.com and look at our pages. We also, our program is available on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com. You can listen 9 hours a day. Program is available on shortwave 3 hours a day, and then of course there is the weekend program that people can get. They also satellite, and anybody can get an inexpensive satellite dish and receiver and listen to us 9 hours a day if they don't have access to internet, and there's no charge. Once you have your satellite up there working, you can hear my program and Joyce Riley and a couple of other programs, Pastor Butch Paul, Chuck Chrismeyer. But we do 9 hours a day. No, we don't do it all live, but you'll hear 9 hours a day of Radio Liberty, 9 hours a day of Joyce Riley, and Joyce does an excellent job of bringing out what's going on in the world.
Also, so you do nine, I mean, you're definitely a driven person.
Quite mad, I'm not quite sure, but we do 5 hours of talk radio a day, plus the weekend program.
Right.
Plus programs with nice people like you call, and we're on with you.
Yeah, and I'm very glad you agreed to do this, because I think you've got a lot of great information, and just being able to go to your website and various other avenues, you have put out a tremendous amount of information and research for people to draw upon. With this going on our economy right now, this, from my research, it's this stuff was kind of pretty much preset up about the turn of the last century, correct?
Well, this has been around for 5,000 years.
We
can go back, we can talk about certainly a man named John Ruskin at Oxford in 1870, who inspired Cecil Rhodes, who established his secret society in 1891. But the idea of establishing a world government has always been there in the secret societies. People do not understand that. You go back to ancient Egypt, and Egypt was replaced by Babylon as the major force in the world, and Babylon by the the Assyrians came along, and then of course you had the Babylon, then you had the Medes and the Persians, and then you had the Greeks come in, and then the Romans, but always within all of these societies, there were always secret societies, and they all were looking for the hidden power, the explanation for what was going on in the world, and all of the secret societies said that there was a hidden force there that you could tap into and you could gain power. And of course, this is absolutely true. The hidden force has always been here, but what is this hidden force that they look for, that we give them the understanding of how to build these magnificent buildings, how they could build the seven wonders of the world, the pyramids, the hanging towers of Babylon, the temple of Zeus, the various things that we read about, and some of them we can even see continue. How were they able to do this? They tapped into the secret knowledge. What is the secret knowledge? Well, of course, we have a wonderful talk called The Forbidden Secret, which explains it to you. But to summarize it, basically, there is another spiritual dimension. Certainly, we're told in the Bible that you should avoid people who are mediums and who are fortune tellers and are into spiritualism and sorcery and these others, because these people, certainly will lead you away from the Lord, and that's absolutely true. They will. And it is because these people are tapping into a spiritual dimension. and there is a supernatural dimension there. There are miracles, but they're not necessarily from God. We're having a conference on the 26th of this month, pardon me, of next month, October 26th, right here in the Monterey Bay. We're having a friend of ours, Joanna Michelson, who was a medium, who was being trained for surgical or psychic surgery. She participated in over 400 operations and saw miracle after miracle after miracle. Where people who had been abandoned by the doctors were suddenly cured of the cancer, and she thought this was the most wonderful thing in the world until she realized it was all demonic. And there really are demonic forces in the world that energize human beings. And of course, when Joanna went back and talked to many of these people that she had witnessed these miracles on, they were all demonically possessed. And there are people in the world today who are demonically possessed, who are working towards a one-world government, want to destroy Christianity, and enthrone a world leader. And that's what it's really all about. And we even offer some of the publications put out by the people who are in the other dimension. There's an organization, you get them up on the internet, they're called the Lucis Trust, lucistrust.org, go get their material. They will tell you they work with somebody called Sanat Kamara. Who's Sanat Kamara? That's an anagram for Satan. They're Satanists. And they publish something called the Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy, a little pamphlet they tell people to distribute, so we distribute it. Anybody who buys any of our material and then ask for a copy of the Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy, will send it. They tell you they have their people planted in every high position in government. And some people know what they're doing, others simply are under their control. And people must understand there is a spiritual element to everything going on today. It took me about 30 years to figure that out, but I guess I'm a slow learner, but eventually I did begin to put the pieces together. Well, I guess it was 20 years before I realized the spiritual dimension of what's going on.
Well, their symbolism is everywhere around us.
Oh, yeah, right, on the back of a dollar bill. You'll see it on, you turn on your television set at CBS, and right there in the right lower quadrant, you'll see the eye there. That's, of course, a symbol of the ancient mysteries. And you'll see them, so many of the places, you'll see it all over Washington, D.C. They're all of these cult symbols there, and you look at some of the gargoyle faces and the horrible things that you see. They have a statue of King Neptune. Why would we have that in our nation's capital? And of course, you have to understand that at the time America was founded, we were predominantly Christian, but there were always the occult forces there coming out of the secret societies, and specifically the Rosicrucians, and by 1790, when they began to build Washington, D.C., coming out of Masonry, because Masonry is a modern-day manifestation of the ancient mystery religion.
Well,
it's what Albert Pike says in his book, Morals and Dogma. And if I could just put in a pitch for my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, we will give you all the references where you can look up and find out if I'm telling you the truth. And if I'm telling you the truth, then you need to help us get the information out. We've got two great DVDs. One is called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. That's The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning. The other is Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. And the very, very professionally done, very well done. They will tell you basically the story I'm telling you. We are involved in a spiritual battle.
Well,
play it on the political.
But when I talk to people, I talk to people that, you know, are Masons and that sort, the last thing, I mean, they in no way think that they're involved with anything of that sort.
Well, first of all, many of them have no idea what they're involved with. But you honestly believe that the people who are Luciferian will actually come forward and tell you they're Luciferian?
It doesn't look like it.
No. We have posted, incidentally, on our website a DVD somebody made, actually, where he talks to this Mason. He's a Shriner. He's got the Shrine hat in his hand. And basically, he admits he's a Luciferian. It's up on my website under other videos. And it's well worthwhile watching. But Sydney, if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, why we give you the references from their literature about the Luciferian organizations. And the Lucifer Luciferian forces they worship. But you see, Masonry is really a modern form of Gnosticism. And most Masons have no idea what Masonry is about, but the people at the top do. In fact, if you read the writings of Manly P. Hall, he lectures on ancient philosophy, he will tell you that Masonry is a fraternity, an inner fraternity and an outer fraternity. An outer fraternity of men who want to do good and want to attend meetings and have high ideals, but an inner fraternity of men who study the Arcanum and Canorum. The Arcanum and Canorum. And what is that? Well, from my research, we find out this is the secret, or the secret of secrets is the definition of the terms. And what is the secret? That Lucifer is God. And this takes us into the Gnostic belief, and if you read Albert Pike, he will tell you that modern-day Masonry is a manifestation of the Gnostic beliefs.
At what level would they introduce the Luciferian?
Probably at the 32nd, 33rd degree.
Okay, right.
And certainly there are levels far higher than the 33rd degree, which most Masons say don't exist. Well, first of all, they may not know they exist. And so they're going to say they don't exist. If they know they exist, they're going to have to deny it. They can't let you know what this is really all about.
Well, what about all these other organizations? Are they considered secret or anything like that, like your Odd Fellows or your Moose or your various other organizations that
none of them are as flagrant as Masonry. Basically,
okay.
You can be sure that the people are there, are working at the upper echelons of those groups, but none of them are as flagrant as Masonry in their statement that they really are part of this world occult movement. But
well,
if you read the writings of Albert Pike, of Mandy P. Hall, of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky, who was a co-Mason, she was a female Mason, and they had those in England, and you read her Secret Destiny, of the Secret Destiny, why, of course, she will tell you quite frankly, Satan is God. But that is the Gnostic belief, and you read up on Gnosticism, and you find out that the Gnostics, who are really a manifestation of the ancient Manichaean and of the Zoroastrian religions and of the ancient mystery religions and the Kabbalah, because they all believe the same thing, that there are two gods. One is the god that the foolish Christians worship, an inferior god, but they worship the real God who gives you wealth and power and freedom to do whatever you want to. And there is wealth and power that can be obtained by tapping into this other dimension. But you sure don't want to do it because it'll cost you your eternal soul.
Now, is there a tie-in at all with the Masonic and these organizations like your Knights of Columbus or Knights of Malta or Knights of, you know, these
Not
Templars?
Only indirectly, because certainly there are people working probably what's more so in the Knights of Malta than in the Knights of Columbus, although in every religion and every branch of it are these people who've given themselves to the other side. They're working in medicine. They're working at the upper echelons of the Catholic Church and of the Protestant Church and of the Jewish Church. In the Jewish religion, there's a group known as the Sabbateans, who are frank Luciferians. And certainly there are cells. If you read the book, The Windswept House, written by Malachi Martin, he will tell you about the satanic sacrifice, or feigned satanic sacrifice, simulated satanic sacrifice, held in the basement of the Vatican, which was timed to coincide with a real human sacrifice that was being held elsewhere. And the book is The Windswept House. It's a fictionalized version of what's going on in the Catholic Church today, written by Malachi Martin. But talking to Malachi off the radio, and he told me, yes, this human sacrifice did occur exactly as he described. But then, of course, we see feigned human sacrifices, at the Bohemian Grove here north of San Francisco. We got a wonderful DVD that Alex Jones did on the Bohemian Grove. We've got a great book on satanic crimes. Goes into the satanic crimes of the members of the Bilderbergers, and so all of these organizations tie in together, and many people like David Rockefeller belong to most of them.
How do they draw people into doing stuff that seems to be in antithesis of their upbringing, or does that make sense?
First of all, of course, we are senators and presidential candidates in their nefarious activities, and they ultimately control them. And, of course, it's so easy to appeal to people. After all, if somebody offered you $100 million right now to do something that was immoral, would you consider it? Well, I won't ask you to answer that. But you see, basically, they reward these people with great wealth and great power and great fame and great notoriety. And a lot of people want that sort of thing. But once you get into this, it's very difficult to get out. And if you do try to get out, they will simply kill you.
Well, and that's, when you're saying consider it, there's a whole lot of other aspects that go into even, when they're being asked. I mean, it's not like they're just giving you one option. They have a lot of ways that they seduce you into it.
Amen to that. Well, basically, we have a set of DVDs. You can get the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version of a DVD titled, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. And this is the story of the great stars of rock and roll. And most of the people prominent in rock and roll have been involved in Luciferianism, whether it was the Beatles or so many of the other groups. In fact, if you look at some of the albums put out by the Beatles, they featured their, hidden on the front of their album, pictures of Aleister Crowley, who was a Satanist, who called himself the Beast, the most wicked man in the world. Crowley died in the 1950s or 60s, but of course the Beatles went right along with that sort of thing, and they actually featured a picture of Aleister Crowley on one of their most famous albums.
Well, you
need to get those films, pardon me, the DVD, mm-hmm. They Stole Their Souls for Rock and Roll.
Your background is in the medical arena, and a lot of this is very much embedded in that area too. And one of them that I have an interest in, really been kind of keyed in on lately, is some of the mind wars and mind control. And one of the things that has really struck me is watching how they implement from birth. In a sense of so if you become a doctor, they work you to death as part of the way to break you down. Or you go into the army, they break you down before they, remold you.
Sure.
Would you like to get into that a little bit?
Well, they know how to control people's minds. Of course, you're absolutely right. When you go in the military, they take a young fellow off the streets of our big cities, been in the gangs, and in 6 weeks, he is a soldier or a sailor, and they know how to do it with sleep deprivation and all sorts of shouting and various techniques and physical exhaustion, and so they can alter people's minds, and they do this with so many things. We actually have a DVD called Operation Monarch, techniques that the government uses on people. We're constantly being manipulated. Everybody's being manipulated. Today in our society, we're being manipulated. We saw this last week when of course, Henry Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, goes on television and says, the world's coming to an end. The worst catastrophe there's ever been. We've got to do something now. There's a sense of urgency. I want $700 billion with no accountability. Give it to me, or else the world's going to come to an end. And they didn't say exactly those words, but that was the inference. And he actually compromised so many of our congressmen and senators, so they're going to go ahead and vote for this. Just hopefully we've launched a movement to try to get people to call their senators and call their congressmen and say, vote against this bailout. This is not going to help us. This is not going to stop the collapse of the world economy. And I talked to my congressman's office today. Almost everybody's calling in saying, vote against it. But that doesn't matter. They're going to be able to control the minds and reality of the congressmen with a sense of urgency. And I fear many of them are actually going to vote for something that's simply going to prolong the agony and get us even further into debt. But they've developed the techniques, not only mind control techniques, they actually have people within the military who were involved in the supernatural and trying to tap the other dimension. And I personally witnessed with my own eyes a spoon that had actually been bent into two complete circles by a major general in the United States military whose job was to tap into the supernatural. I didn't see him bent it, but I was back with my friend Joyce Riley back in Missouri. She sold me the spoon that he had bent. I tried to bend it back straight. No way you could. He was actually to take, you know, this steel that's in the spoon and simply dissolve its matrix, bend it, and then solidify it again.
You're talking about remote viewing. You're talking about remote viewing, are you not?
Well, I'm talking remote viewing. I'm talking about all of the things by which they're able to control people's minds. And of course, they try to get into astral projection. They try to get into mind control, trying to tap into the demonic beings and get them harness their activities for military purposes. Trying to tap into the forbidden knowledge so they can learn how to build better and more effective means of killing people. And believe me, the knowledge is there, and our military, our tax dollars are being used to funnel into that. So one of the leading Satanists of our time was a man who headed the Temple of Seth. Aquino is his name, a general in the United States.
Michael Aquino. Okay. And I'm somewhat familiar with some of his background.
Right. And you wonder why they would have anybody with that caliber as first a colonel and then a general in the army.
This is the part where you were talking about, you know, how old the thing, the impetus behind wars and the economies being set up and financed through drug trades and that apparently things have not changed. I mean,
nothing has changed, unfortunately.
And slavery is a big part of it too.
Mm-hmm.
And
we live in a fallen world, and I fear that the utopian world we've lived here in America is going to be destroyed. I believe God is going to bring His judgment on this country. He's letting us do whatever we want to, but in the end, He's going to intervene. And this is our current message in our programs: to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out in political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. And people are going to have to turn to the Lord, first of all, for strength, and then they're going to have to join us in this epic struggle to try to take America back. And what we need is a great revival in this nation, and I see the possibility for it as the whole economy begins to collapse.
Well, even if you look at the human nature behind a lot of this, the people that are even at the top have to be as much or more brainwashed than what they think they're doing to the rest of us.
They've given themselves over to evil.
And given
themselves over to evil and self-indulgence.
Right. And as far as thinking that, I mean, when you watch corporations start buying out corporation after corporation, there's a point in time when there's no other corporations left.
Right.
They end up destroying themselves. Mm-hmm. And in a sense, that's what they've opened themselves up to, as long as they work in those directions. This one world thing is kind of, you know, cutting to the chase as to what's left now, but to destroy, you know, humans. And you do get into the eugenics.
Eugenics and population control, which are one of the major thrusts of the people who control our government today. And if anybody doubts that, we actually offer a National Security Study Memorandum 200. It was initially a top-secret document that came out in 1974, over the name of Henry Kissinger, but we have National Security Study Memorandum 200, which tells how we've got to control the populations of all these growing nations throughout the world, because they would potentially be a threat to us. And, of course, we then have to keep them subdued, and we actually have the testimony of David MacArthur for the House Appropriations for Military Affairs Commission in 1969, where he asked for $10 million to create a new disease that could be used for mass killing. We have it. I mean, there's no question. Population control is one of the major thrusts of the people who control United States to eliminate literally millions, hundreds of millions of people in third world nations. We're poisoning them with our vaccines. We're doing everything we can to block the use of public health efforts to stop the spread of AIDS. We have a wonderful DVD. It's called Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda, done by a young man named David Ayoub, a physician, a friend of ours. And he goes into how the vaccines that we're giving in third world nations are loaded with mercury, which of course destroys the fertility not only of one generation but subsequent generations. We're poisoning people throughout the world.
But my understanding that it isn't just mercury, though, because they don't even have mercury in some of them.
Right. You're absolutely right. And, of course, what we're doing with the MMR, and, of course, the incidence of autism skyrocketed after the introduction of MMR because we're giving people three simultaneous infections, active live viruses. And certainly we knew from experience of the past, if you got measles, chances are you recover and be fine. If you got chickenpox, chances are you recover and be fine. You got mumps, chances are you recover and be fine. But if you got any two of them together, mumps and chickenpox, or mumps and measles, or measles and chickenpox together, why, of course, there were serious consequences and many times severe mental changes after that. And of course, that's what we're doing. We're intentionally giving people three infections together with disastrous consequences, and you can chart the skyrocketing of the incidence of autism, the epidemic of autism in the United States, to the time when we started giving MMR in 1980, and they started giving it in England in 1990, and what do you think happened? They got skyrocketing autism as well. So,
is Alzheimer's tied in with that?
What's that?
Is Alzheimer's tied in with it?
Alzheimer's really comes from mercury and aluminum and other heavy metals you get as you get older. Of course, this is why they're advising that the elderly take the influenza injection, because it gives them the aluminum and the mercury that will increase their incidence of their Alzheimer's disease.
So, my understanding is, okay, now if you're getting fluoride in the water and fluoride in numerous medications and that sort, doesn't fluoride kind of accentuate chemical process?
They all do. I mean, so we're poisoning with fluoride, we're poisoning with mercury, we're poisoning with the aluminum in the vaccinations, we're poisoning them by giving them multiple vaccines together. We're poisoning our people certainly with aspartame, which is an excitotoxin that destroys nerve cells. We're poisoning them with the genetically modified foods, and we could go right down the line of all the things they're doing. They're putting chloramine in water all across this country, which has disastrous effects, at least for certain people. But the average American can't believe that these things could be going on. We're poisoning them with many of the proprietary medicines. We're giving them, like the statins, which actually are carcinogenic. And if you look at the studies, why, of course, they in no way actually cut down on the incidence of death.
So even those that think that they're going to be the ones left, they have to be exposing themselves to that sort of thing,
but
too.
But you see, they don't care because they are disciples of Lucifer, and they do what he tells them to do. They do not worry about it. They think that when they die, they're going to be in this wonderful heaven. It's sort of like the Muslim who goes out and commits suicide believing he's going to heaven with 72 virgins, you know. It sounds great, but it's not the way it works out. And what we're dealing with is organized insanity. Once you understand that, everything makes sense. We wonder, why would logical people do the things we're doing? Well, because they're not logical people. Because they worship a different god.
It does get kind of overwhelming at times, but Dr. Monteith, I hope you'll come back on again.
I'll be glad to.
And we can pursue this a little further, and hopefully...
Well, let me just put out a telephone number. It's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. The one book people need to read is Brotherhood of Darkness.
And thank you again, Dr. Monteith.